Hello, and welcome back to the Paranormal Podcast. I'm Dan Pacella, co-founder, co-lead investigator for Orange County, New York Paranormal. Thank you for joining us again. If you haven't had a chance already, if you're new to the festivities, please subscribe, rate, and review on the podcast platforms. If you're watching us on YouTube or on our Facebook channel, thank you, and please like and subscribe and ring the bell there as well. For those of you who are joining us coming back, thank you so much for tuning back into us. And again, for those who are new, welcome. This is, I believe, our fifth installment of the Paranormal Podcast. We've tackled some interesting paranormal discussions so far, even an interview with some really interesting insight into the paranormal world. And today will be no different as we dive into today's topic, which is there more to the investigation than just the investigation? You bet there is. So, as I said, is there more to it? Oh, boy, is there more to it. And we're going to dive in. Last week's topic, we talked about paranormal television shows and the, you know, the double-edged sword that they are. But one of the things they do is they show you some amazing equipment and some amazing locations. But what doesn't fit into the 42 minutes and what frankly would be bad television are the things that they don't show, which is the research and acquisition of locations, equipment preparation, setup, planning, traveling, and setting up in locations. And a lot of locations groups like ourselves investigate, there's a time limit. You only have so much time to do that. What happens when you arrive at a location, either for the first time ever or the first time to investigate or for a subsequent investigation of a location? Planning your attack. Where do you set things up based off the stories? Now, a lot of the shows do show that a little bit in the beginning, which is great. But, you know, they show the investigation, but they also don't show what happens after it. Tearing down the equipment, evidence review, and how that gets shared and what that experience is like. And even the publication of evidence. Now, with the TV shows, the TV episode is the publication. But for smaller groups like us, which is 99% of us, how do we do it? Well, in today's episode, we're going to talk about how we do it, all the normal things that we do during setup in how we investigate our... In today's episode, we're going to talk about how we do all of these things, every single step that we take from booking it to publishing it, to give you a deeper idea of exactly what goes into investigating the paranormal and why this is such a time-consuming activity. So to start off, and again, all of this is our methodology. We're probably not right, but we're probably not wrong either, and every group does it differently. So this is just how Orange County, New York Paranormal prepares, executes, and does our investigations. We're not saying this is the way to do it. It works for us, and it has worked very well for us. But one of the things that we need to start off by saying is we don't just investigate. Like, we don't do abandoned buildings. That's really unsafe for a multitude of non-paranormal reasons. There's a reason buildings are abandoned. A lot of it's structural. A lot of it has to do with being unsafe. And also, even though a building is abandoned, as I once told someone during an event, somebody owns it. And if you're in a place that somebody owns without their permission, that's called trespassing. So we don't do any of that for obvious non-paranormal reasons. We also don't investigate cemeteries. It's something in which Emily and I have disagreed a little bit on over the years. Honestly, I think it's rude. Now, if there's cemeteries where spirits have been apparently trying to communicate, that's one thing. But just showing up at a cemetery with a digital recorder to talk to spirits of people who, you know, if they're in a cemetery, in my view, they're probably at rest. If they weren't at rest, they would be where they want to be or where they need to be. So we don't really do cemeteries. Now, we will visit cemeteries in terms of doing the prep before the investigation. So if we're going to try and talk to a specific spirit, we might, if they are buried nearby, we may go visit the grave and pay our respects the day of the investigation beforehand. But we don't investigate just random cemeteries because there may be something there. I don't know. To me, it reminds me of the old the game Ding Dong Ditch, if you know what I'm talking about, where you ring a doorbell and run away Most of us probably did that as kids at least once. I know I did. That's what that feels like to me. Whether you agree with me or not, you know, let me know in the review or the comments. But that's just how I feel about it. And so we just don't really do that. So as a result, every location we investigate, we have to seek it out. And it is a thankless job. And it is something that Emily has done incredibly well. And it's something that I don't wish to do ever. So thankfully, she enjoys the hunt because it would frustrate me. But where do we look? I mean, she goes online. She spends a lot of time online. Hearsay. We get a lot of really good locations from events that we do. In fact, an investigation that we're going to talk about a little later at the Gilboa Museum, the person who got us in there came to one of our events and said, hey, would you like to come investigate our museum? And that's awesome when that happens. There are also a lot of magazines. New York State does a great job. The Haunted Trail of New York is just a fantastic resource if you're in the state of New York looking for haunted locations, because that's honestly how we started. Emily would just go through that book and go, okay, well, this is a haunted hotel. Let's rent a room here. But she starts months in advance. And there is a ton of frustration that comes with it. For every 100 messages that she sends, she may get 5 responses. 3 of them are telling us where to go, you know, sometimes hostily, which is weird, that you know, you're a haunted location and we're not, like, trying to do anything bad, but sometimes we get some visceral responses. One of them will inevitably ask for like $2,000 for the privilege of coming there, and one might be interested, and that usually one may turn into an investigation. Last summer, we decided to try something completely different. We printed out postcards with QR codes to our website and had a little blurb on it about, hi, we're Dan and Emily, this is what we do. We sent out 100 of them, one response. The Clifton 5 Theater in Pennsylvania, which honestly was worth to send out the 100. That's an awesome location, a great group of people in their own in-house paranormal team. Great folks. And we're actually going back there in a couple of weeks, so because of how much we loved it there. But that just gives you some idea of the amount of work that goes into getting so few responses. And as a result, she has to start so far ahead of time. Now, how far ahead do we know? Because of the lead time that it takes and the amount of no's she knows we're going to get, we actually have every investigation and almost every event for the rest of 2023 already on our calendars. And she's actually, because of that, already working on next year. So it's a ton of work that she has to do to get locations. And everybody who works with us appreciates it a lot, but it's frustrating. It's a lot of work. But in our opinion, it's the right way to do it, since we don't do the abandoned buildings. We don't do cemeteries and stuff like that. We also don't do a lot of ticketed events anymore because we have so much equipment that we're able to do things on our own. So really, this is a frustrating way for us to do it, but it is how we do it. And thanks to Emily's perseverance, we've been very successful at getting some awesome, awesome locations. So once we have a location locked in, obviously the work isn't done yet. We have to do a lot of research. Now, Emily has done a lot of that research in reaching out to the location to know it was a place that suits us and what we want to do and the kind of paranormal activity we're looking to discover and capture evidence on, and the kind of people we want to help with that evidence. But there's a lot that goes into researching, and man, you've got to find everything. Thankfully, I don't know how folks did this before the internet, but a lot of stuff online. We do visit local libraries sometimes. That's getting less and less useful as a research tool. One of the unfortunate side effects of all the digital stuff is that libraries are not as much of a resource as they used to be, and that's a crying shame for a lot of reasons outside the paranormal, but for our purposes, we're finding them less and less useful. We interview anyone we can, staff, owners, folks who've been there, and we tour the location if possible. And most of the time, it's not possible. And I'll get into why in the next segment here. But we have to also find what other groups have found. The nice thing is a lot of paranormal locations have been investigated before, because as I say a lot, there's 10,000 paranormal groups out there. There's a good chance that if you have a haunted location, we're not the first people to investigate it. So we try to find whatever published evidence we can, and we rarely find any. I'll talk about that in a little bit too, but it's very rare that we find anything out there for any location. So barring that, that we don't go often, we don't often get to talk to folks until the day of. We do try to get a floor plan because it helps me to know exactly how big the location is, because that goes right into the next thing, which is we have to decide what we're going to use. 80,000 square feet is a lot different than 5,000 square feet. So how many cameras are we going to need? How many potential investigators do we need to pull from our, you know, paranormal family of investigators to ask if they're able to come? Or is the place small enough that, you know, too many people would actually cause a problem because it's so small that every time somebody moves around, you'd hear them. So sometimes you need two investigators, and man, sometimes you want to have six. Is there an outside element to the investigation? That presents its own challenges. These cameras and these recorders are really sensitive. And I actually find trail cameras work better for outside elements because they kind of just record whenever they sense movement or sound. But again, that's a whole other element. That's a whole other equipment suitcase. So we have to know that. Is there power? That's a real important one. We used to plug in all the time. And in our first year of investigating, we usually went to places that had power, so it wasn't a big deal. When we investigated Hillview Manor in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, I had to come up with a solution for batteries because there is no power. So that's important to know. And speaking of batteries, man, you got to start charging them as soon as you can. We've solved a lot of our battery changing issues by I've created a lot of rigs for our equipment that just use long-term batteries so we don't have to change them all night long. But again, you've got to charge all that stuff and it has to be charged. Also, how long do we have? Many locations limit the time for various reasons, but most of them are in museums and businesses. They don't want to leave you there unsupervised, and I don't blame them. They don't know us, and a lot of times they just don't want to stay late. We've actually gotten to investigate some locations by promising that we'll be done by 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, because the ability to investigate the location for us is more important than the length of the investigation. We want to try to get what we can. And also, are there any safety issues? You know, is it a rundown building? Is there going to be mold? For example, at the Seneca Falls Machines building, there's a hole in the floor in one of the second floor parts. You got to, know that and be aware of that. And you have to know it's there before you're walking around in the dark. And from all of that, you put together your plan. It shocks me. It shocks me every time. It shouldn't anymore because I've heard it so much. When we're talking to owners and we're talking to new owners or staff or people we've known forever, it shocks us how many times we're told, oh, the last group that came in here, they didn't really have a plan. Now, most groups do. Most groups are good and they come in with a plan. But it just surprises me that anybody anymore with all the resources out there doesn't come in with a plan of any kind. But, we have to know the kind of equipment we're going to bring. We have to know some of the history because what trigger objects do we want to use, if any? For example, if we had not known from talking to the owners of Grapevine Farms before we went there the first time, we wouldn't have known there were children. We wouldn't have known that they sometimes play with the toys. And we wouldn't have captured that amazing evidence when we brought the toys of them not only thanking us, but asking if they can have one. If we hadn't done our research, we hadn't done our homework on that, we wouldn't have had a chance to capture that because we wouldn't have known to bring the right trigger objects. The Hotel Broad Albin, which we stayed over way early in our adventures, it used to be a quack clinic for an alcoholism cure. So we brought alcohol and we brought liquor to try and, get some of the spirits that might be there. Hey, you came here to get rid of it. Here's a great trigger object. Come have a drink with me. So there's also experiments that you want to try, things you want to do. Like, you have to look at it that way. But if you don't do the research early, way before you go there, you're flying blind and you're just not going to have the quality of investigation you want to have. And if you don't have that, you're not going to get the best evidence possible. So now the prep's done. It's investigation day, the day you live for. It's fantastic. You wake up in the morning and regardless of what happens, you're going to be a different person the next morning. And I mean that to say that every investigation you ever do does change you a little bit. It, and not like negatively or things attaching, all that. No, it's not that. It's that every time we investigate, it just broadens the experience. It broadens your view. It just makes you have a deeper understanding, yet have less understanding of the world around you. And it makes you want to know so much more. And it's just exciting to do that. And because, you know, unlike paranormal television, we don't have days to spend up there because we have full-time jobs. We wish we could do this for a living, but we don't. We are usually traveling to the location the day of, and quite often traveling home after the investigation is done. So we're packing up the car that day. We're traveling up that day. So the excitement built. I like it. I actually like the drive up, and usually we're driving a couple of hours. I really like it. It's just the anticipation is there, and all the work you've done, all the research, all the planning, it's great. You know that a lot of it's going to get thrown out the window because that happens. You know, things happen during an investigation, but there's no feeling like investigation day. There just isn't. And once we're there, now if we haven't been there yet, we obviously take a tour and we talk to the owners, we talk to the staff. And by the way we investigate, we're inviting the owners and or interested staff to investigate with us. It's their location. And we have found that A, that's weirdly uncommon. I don't know why. And B, we actually get better evidence that way because the spirits don't know Emily and I if we haven't been there before. They do know the staff and the owners. And dealing with the dead isn't that much different than dealing with the living in a lot of ways. We're strangers. And you're more likely to communicate and talk and interact with somebody you know than somebody you don't know. Children spirits, if they listen to their parents, they ain't talking to me because I'm a stranger. So we love it when the staff and the owners investigate with us. And honestly, our paranormal family, the people who investigate with us from time to time, they're owners and staff of places we've investigated who got addicted to the feeling of investigation day too. We unpack, we organize the gear. This is usually what I'm doing while Emily's finalizing everything, talking to the staff, doing all of that stuff. And this is where my OCD is helpful, I feel. Emily may disagree, but I feel, look, we have to be meticulous in with the gear and with the equipment. It has to be packed meticulously. When you unpack it, you have to unpack it meticulously. You have to sort it meticulously so that later when you need something, it's there. And then when it gets packed up again after the investigation, you got to do that meticulously too. It's the only way you could ever keep track of anything. We used to use backpacks. I don't know how we didn't lose everything. Now we have cases where cases have foam in them, and the foam has the shape of the exact piece of equipment. It's very meticulous. It's very OCD, but man, it cuts down on the setup time and the breakdown time. And remember what I said before, you don't always have unlimited time. If you only have 4 hours in a location, every minute you can cut down on the setup and the teardown just gives you more time to investigate. And there's also the personal preparation. Everybody prepares differently. I don't say much. It's mainly because I'm focused on setting up the equipment and making sure everything's working and making sure everything's in the right place. When we first started, people would think I was angry. And Emily, because we've been married for almost 20 years, said, no, that's Dan focusing. He just wants to make sure everything's working. Emily prepares by helping me out where I need it, by talking to the owners, talking to the staff, talking, just doing the last minute interview stuff, getting our, you know, getting everything straight at home, you know, just making sure everything's fine there. And then we load up our vests and we begin. And by the way, the vest is vital. If you ever watch our videos, I'm wearing a vest. I get made fun of for the vest all the time. Emily makes fun of me. Tim makes fun of me until he asked me for a vest. Because you carrying so much gear with you, these vests, and I think the one I have is basically just a high density fishing vest. Man, those pockets come in handy. The vest is vital. If you learn anything from this video, if you're a paranormal investigator and you don't have a vest, buy one. Don't matter. Don't let them ridicule you. Emily ridicules me all the time for the vest. The vest is vital. Trust me. So you load it up, you have your vest on, and you start investigating. And this is where everybody does their own thing. Every group has their own method. This is ours. I'm not saying it's the right way. It's the right way for us. I always start by introducing ourselves to the spirits by name. I think it's reason why in most a lot of our investigations we get our names back a lot, and I feel that it's because we start off by introducing ourselves. I tell them why we're here, you know, and the opportunity we're presenting to them to have their voices heard. It's been a long time for a lot of these spirits, and they may not have this opportunity. We let them know we're here to listen. These little blinky lights that are all over the place, these weird things we're holding in our hands, if you talk to them, they will hear you and will be able to play your voice back to you, hopefully. I also tell them every time that we come with respect. Respect for who they are, who they were, the lives they lead, and the lives they led. And we ask them to respect us in turn. And so far, so good on that arrangement. Ever since I've talked about respect in our introductions, we don't get a lot. We haven't gotten nearly as many, not negative EVPs, but like get out of here kind of things. Again, you know, dealing with the dead isn't that much different dealing with the living. If you treat them with respect, they'll treat you with respect. As I've said in previous episodes, in this field, if you go looking for trouble, you're going to find it. We try to nip trouble in the butt early by saying, look, we're going to respect you. Please respect us back. And then we investigate. And our investigations, this is the only part that's almost always the same, based on how we approach it. Like, you know, based on how many people we have with us, we'll either break off into groups, or if it's just Emily and I, we'll stay together. And we'll work either bottom to top or top to bottom. I'm not sure why we started doing it that way, but it's just kind of how we do it. We don't start in the hot spots. We like to start at the bottom and work up and top. We know where the hot spots are, but we are going to do the building in a very methodical way. We use handheld cameras to film everything. We focus in on the hotspots areas, or as we're walking around, sometimes you just feel it. I mean, we're a tech-based group, but after a while, your body's the best tool, and you do feel it. You feel the hair standing up on your arms. You feel that heavy feeling, and you're like, okay, let's stop here for a couple of minutes. We do often, most of the time, use stationary cameras in the hot spots to film when we're not in an area. Especially useful on a first investigation where sometimes the spirits are a little more standoffish. We tend to get evidence further away from where we are the first time than subsequent investigations in the same place. We will go solo if need be. I don't advocate investigating alone ever. We only go solo in areas where the other person isn't that far away. And there's non-paranormal reasons for that, for safety issues. A lot of these buildings, some of them are not kept. You know, I mentioned a hole in the floor in a factory. You know, you don't want to be too far away. We do have two-way radios that we use all the time. But we go solo sometimes. If we have a lot of investigators for one night, you know, and it's a pretty safe building structurally, I may sit in a room by myself for a couple hours just to see what happens. But beyond that, we don't, you know, it's, we only go solo if we feel we'll get better evidence that way. This is not made for TV. We're not there to get spooked or anything. We're not there for a scare. We're there to collect paranormal evidence, and whatever we can do to draw out that evidence, we're going to try to do. Pretty much any way we can, except for provoking, because as I said before, we came with respect, so we're going to treat them with respect. We're not a big provoking group. I don't advocate it. There are people who investigate that way, and if it works for them, great. It's just not our way. And then we conclude. We investigate for however long the investigation either takes, needs to take, or is allowed to take. And once we're finished, we collect the gear and we pack it up meticulously, of course, and then we debrief the staff or owners that were with us. We talk to them. We debrief among our own group. If it's just Emily and I, we'll debrief as we're driving home. And then we say our goodbyes. And this is something they don't show on TV a lot, but it's something I feel you should do. Every time we do an event, we tell everybody to do this. Before we leave, we say, hey, you know what? Thank you for having us. Thank you for having us in your home. We are returning to our home, but you are not welcome in our home. You are to stay in your home. And we say something akin to that a couple of times as we leave an investigation. And so far, so good. We've never had anything follow us home, which is great. And I honestly think that that is part of it. You treat them with respect. And then at the end, you say, hey, thank you for having us. We'll come back to visit you. But you're not welcome with us. Stay where you are, and we'll stay where we'll go where we go. And that seems to work for us. One thing that's rarely shown on television, and for really good reason, is the reviewing the footage. As I said earlier, we're a tech group. I'll use anywhere from 8 to 16 different cameras per investigation. And you have to watch all of the footage, all of it. It can take 30 to 40 hours, even more. I've had reviews take 50 to 60 hours because of how big the place was and how many cameras we had to use. And what you're doing during that time is simply just watching a screen. I always say everybody wants to be a paranormal investigator until you have to watch a video of a room for 6 hours and nothing happens. But during that review, you're watching that screen, you've got the noise-canceling headphones on, at least that's what I do, and you're looking for sounds, light anomalies, anything of interest. You isolate that clip, you break it out, and then you review it again, and then of the clips you end up getting after that initial review, you review those again and narrow down again. Okay, well, I debunked that. Can't explain that one. Let's get that one to the next round. And as with everything, you know, our process for doing this has evolved and gotten way more efficient over the years, but it's still time consuming. And because you can't speed up the time, you have to watch every second. Every second of video you film during an investigation is a second of video you have to watch later to properly review that footage. And, you know, of that 30, 40 hours of evidence review, a really good investigation will give me about 2 minutes of clips that I can show as, yeah, I think this might be something that we can't explain or something paranormal. And one of the things that's really key is reviewing the footage, reviewing the evidence with the location. I can't believe, and it's happened so many times now that I'm starting to think it's the norm. It's amazing how many locations tell us, yeah, we had a group come in, they did an investigation, but I never saw or heard anything from it. What are you doing? that blows my mind. Like, that's the most fun. That's the reward for doing all that, is being able to say, hey, you know that feeling you're having in this room? You know that kid's voice you thought you heard? Well, our equipment picked that up, too. Being able to attach relevancy to the experiences of folks and owners and staff and homeowners, that's what it's about. I don't know why. And again, it goes back to not much published either. I think what happens is some people do a lot of footage. They sit down to review and go, oh, this isn't for me. And then they walk away from it. That must be it. I can't figure it out why there's not more of a review. We do this every single time. And we do it in person. Sometimes I've actually gotten good at doing it through Zoom because a lot of the places we go are, you know, 4 hours away. And it's just easier for everybody involved to do that through Zoom. And from there, if the location allows, which businesses, museums, historical societies, they all allow us to do, thankfully, we publish it. We publish anything. The only thing we don't really publish automatically is residential, because those are all private. But the video making process, making that, you know, episode, if you will, of an investigation, that for me, that's cool. I really, really enjoy the filmography part of it. Putting it all together, editing it together, telling the story of the location, telling the story of the spirits, and telling our story of the journey and what it's like. I try to put you with us whenever I make an investigation video. And I've gotten a lot better at it over the years. I watched some of our original videos not too long ago, and I was like, oh, why did it take me so long to learn to put a replay in so you could hear the evidence twice? But we publish it all, and it's interesting to me that it's hard to find published evidence. I've actually had groups reach out to us saying, hey, we're investigating a place that you investigated, and you're the only evidence we've seen. Can you tell, you know, do you mind emailing or can I give you a call to talk about what you thought of that and what you think we can do to make the investigation better? That's what this field needs to be. That's awesome. I never turn down that invitation because it's just, it helps. It's not all about what can Orange County paranormal evidence. No, it's the body of evidence. It's good to have different investigators come in. But it's only good if they're going to share their evidence and help build on the story, to build on the story of the spirits, to gain better understanding. We are doing investigations and publishing evidence so the people who come to investigate after us can stand on our shoulders and take what we found and go for the next level of evidence, to tell that story better, to help that spirit in whatever way that we may not be able to or weren't able to, but for some reason that next investigator does. If you are a budding paranormal investigator, I urge you, always review it and share it with the owners. Share it with the staff. It's not just, you know, if not for the spirits, do it for the people themselves who've been feeling like they're crazy because they've had all these experiences and now you can validate them. It's an amazing experience to do that. We've had some deep and profound experiences sharing evidence that has meant so much to some people. To the point that it's moved some folks to tears hearing their name or hearing something said about them that was kind. So we always publish, and that's why. We publish it, we share it, because it's not our evidence. It's the spirit's story, and it's the story of the location, and we're just there to build on that story. And once it's done, and once the review is done, and once we've published, we stay in contact with almost every location we've ever investigated. It's probably why we often get invited back, because Emily stays in contact with them. We've made some really dear friends off of investigating locations, and you've seen them in our videos. If you've watched any of our investigations, Tim and Tracy of Grapevine Farms, Rhea and Margo up in Wayne County have become really good friends of ours because, you know, we've bonded over the idea of, hey, this is a shared experience. This paranormal experience was shared, and it's gotten them very involved and very passionate about it. But once that investigation's done, it's time to start thinking about the next one and working on the next one. In my case, it's about, okay, that's done. Let's start reviewing the next one that I have to review, which in our case is the Omen Theater, because the Gilboa Museum review is pretty much done. If you saw our videos, you know, and our Facebook channel and all that, we were up there about a month ago, and we got some interesting stuff, and I can't wait to share it. We haven't shared it with the folks from the museum yet, but you know, it was more active than I thought, and more focused than I thought. And the weather was interesting. There was a huge thunderstorm while we were there, which does hamper some things, but in this case it was interesting what it added. And that video should be coming out in the next couple of weeks. As I said earlier, the Omen Theater, I that's footage I still have to dive into now that Gilboa is done. I love investigating theaters. Don't ask me why. I don't know what it is. But I do need to get through that because, man, we have a busy summer ahead. So excited about going back to two places that we absolutely loved. We are going back to the Seneca Falls Historical Society in June, and then a couple weeks later, we'll be back at the Clifton 5 Cinema, which, again, a theater, which I absolutely love. These two locations are fantastic. And check out the videos of last year's investigations of those places, and you'll see why we want to go back and we want to continue the narrative of that place, of those investigations, and learn more about the spirits of both of these places, which are fascinating, fascinating stories. And since we'll have so many investigations, we'll have more to review. We have more research to do. We have more of tax to plan. We have more equipment to prepare. We have more, you know, investigation time. We have more traveling. We have more review. We have more sharing the results. And I have a lot more videos to make. And that's great. That's what this is all about. And I'm hoping that, you know, this look behind the curtain has helped you gain more of an understanding of the amount of work that goes into booking locations, preparing to investigate, reviewing, understanding, and sharing evidence from all of those investigations. We don't just go in and fire up the cameras and recorders. It's a process. Is it the right way? That's not for me to say, but it is our way, our plan, our process, our normal. Thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on the Paranormal Podcast.